Fanny could not wait to tell Sophie about Mr. Sacheverell Smith. She launched into a long and excited account of how she had met Mr. Smith the very week Sophie had left and married him before the week was out. Sophie watched her as she talked. Being old gave her an entirely new view of Fanny. She was a lady who was still young and pretty, and she had found the hat shop as boring as Sophie did. But she had stuck with it and done her best, both with the shop and with the three girls, until Mr. Hatter died. Then she had suddenly been afraid she was just like Sophie, old with no reason and nothing to show for it. And then, with you not being there to pass it on to, there seemed no reason not to sell the shop, Fanny was saying, when there was a clatter of feet in the broom cupboard. Michael came through saying, "We've shut the shop, and look who's here." He was holding Martha's hand. Martha was thinner and fairer, and almost looked like herself again. She let go of Michael and rushed at Sophie, shouting, "Sophie, you should have told me," while she flung her arms round her. Then she flung her arms round Fanny, just as if she had never said all those things about her. But this was not all. Letty and Mrs. Fairfax came through the cupboard after Martha, carrying a hamper between them, and after them came Percival, who looked livelier than Sophie had ever seen him. "We came over by carrier at first light," Mrs. Fairfax said, "and we brought... Bless me, it's Fanny!" She dropped her end of the hamper and ran to hug Fanny. Letty dropped her end and ran to hug Sophie. In fact, there was such general hugging and exclaiming and shouting that Sophie thought it was a marvel Hal did not wake up. But she could hear him snoring even through the shouting. "I shall have to leave this evening," she thought. She was too glad to see everyone to consider going before that. Letty was very fond of Percival. While Michael carried the hamper to the bench and unpacked cold chickens and wines and honey puddings from it, Letty hung on to Percival's arm in an owner-like way that Sophie could not quite approve of, and made him tell her all that he remembered. Percival didn't seem to mind. Letty looked so lovely that Sophie didn't blame him. "He just arrived and kept turning into a man and then into different dogs and insisting that he knew me," Letty said to Sophie. "I knew I'd never seen him before, but it didn't matter." She patted Percival's shoulder as if he were still a dog. "But you had met Prince Justin?" Sophie said. "Oh, yes," Letty said offhandedly. "Mind you, he was in disguise in a green uniform, but it was obviously him. He was so smooth and courtly, even when he was annoyed about the finding spells. I had to make him up two lots because they would keep showing that Wizard Solomon was somewhere between us and Market Chipping, and he swore that couldn't be true. And all the time I was doing them, he kept interrupting me, calling me Sweet Lady in a sarcastic sort of way, and asking me who I was, and where my family lived, and how old I was. I thought it was cheek. I'd rather have Wizard Howl, and that's saying something." By this time everyone was milling about, eating chicken and sipping wine. Calcifer seemed to be shy. He had gone down to green flickers, and nobody seemed to notice him. Sophie wanted him to meet Letty. She tried to coax him out. "Is that really the demon who has charge of Howl's life?" Letty said, looking down at the green flickers rather disbelievingly. Sophie looked up to assure Letty that Calcifer was real, and saw Miss Angorian standing by the door looking shy and uncertain. "Oh, do excuse me, I've come at a bad time, haven't I?" Miss Angorian said. "I just wanted to talk to Howl." Sophie stood up, not quite sure what to do. She was ashamed of the way she had driven Miss Angorian out before. It was only because she knew Howl was courting Miss Angorian. On the other hand, that did not mean she had to like her. Michael took things out of Sophie's hands by greeting Miss Angorian with a beaming smile and a shout of welcome. "Hal's asleep at the moment," he said. "Come and have a glass of wine while you wait."
"How kind," said Miss Angorian. But it was plain that Miss Angorian was not happy. She refused wine and wandered nervously about, nibbling at a leg of chicken. The room was full of people who all knew one another very well, and she was the outsider. Fanny didn't help by turning from non-stop talk with Mrs. Fairfax and saying, "What peculiar clothes!" Martha didn't help either. She had seen how admiringly Michael greeted Miss Angorian. She went and made sure that Michael didn't talk to anyone but herself and Sophie. And Letty ignored Miss Angorian and went to sit on the stairs with Percival. Miss Angorian seemed rather quickly to decide that she had had enough. Sophie saw her at the door trying to open it. She hurried over, feeling very guilty. After all, Miss Angorian must have felt very strongly about Hal to have come here at all. "Please don't go yet," Sophie said. "I'll go and wake Hal up."
"Oh, no, you mustn't do that," Miss Angorian said, smiling nervously. "I've got the day off, and I'm quite happy to wait. I thought I'd go and explore outside. It's rather stuffy in here with that funny green fire burning." This seemed to Sophie the perfect way to get rid of Miss Angorian without really getting rid of her. She politely opened the door for her. Somehow, maybe it had to do with the defences Howl had asked Michael to keep up, the knob had got turned round to purple down. Outside was a misty blaze of sun and the drifting banks of red and purple flowers. "What gorgeous rhododendrons!" Miss Angorian exclaimed in her huskiest and most throbbing voice. "I must look." She sprang eagerly down into the marshy grass. "Don't go toward the southeast," Sophie called after her. The castle was drifting off sideways. Miss Angorian buried her beautiful face in a cluster of white flowers. "I won't go far at all," she said. "Good gracious," Fanny said, coming up behind Sophie. "Whatever has happened to my carriage?" Sophie explained as far as she could, but Fanny was so worried that Sophie had to turn the door orange down and open it to show the mansion drive in a much greyer day, where the footman and Fanny's coachman were sitting on the roof of the carriage eating cold sausage and playing cards. Only then would Fanny believe that her carriage had not been mysteriously spirited away. Sophie was trying to explain, without really knowing herself, how one door could open on several different places, when Calcifer surged up from his logs, roaring, "Howl!" he roared, filling the chimney with blue flame. "Howl! Howl Jenkins! The witch has found your sister's family!" There were two violent thumps overhead. Howl's bedroom door crashed, and Howl came tearing downstairs. Letty and Percival were hurled out of his way. Fanny screamed faintly at the sight of him. Howl's hair was like a haystack, and there were red rims round his eyes. "Got me on my weak flank, blaster!" he shouted as he shot across the room with his black sleeves flying. "I was afraid she would. Thanks, Calcifer!" He shoved Fanny aside and hurled open the door. Sophie heard the door bang behind Howl as she hobbled upstairs. She knew it was nosy, but she had to see what happened. As she hobbled through Howl's bedroom, she heard everyone else following her. "What a filthy room!" Fanny exclaimed. Sophie looked out of the window. It was drizzling in the neat garden. The swing was hung with drops. The witch's waving mane of red hair was all dewed with it. She stood leaning against the swing, tall and commanding in her red robes, beckoning and beckoning again. Howl's niece Mary was shuffling over the wet grass toward the witch. She did not look as if she wanted to go, but she seemed to have no choice. Behind her, Howl's nephew Neil was shuffling toward the witch even more slowly, glowering in his most ferocious way, and Howl's sister Megan was behind the two children. Sophie could see Megan's arms gesturing and Megan's mouth opening and shutting. She was clearly giving the witch a piece of her mind, but she was being drawn toward the witch too. Howl burst out onto the lawn. He had not bothered to alter his clothes.
He did not bother to do any magic. He just charged straight at the witch. The witch made a grab for Mary, but Mary was still too far away. Hal got to Mary first, slung her behind him, and charged on, and the witch ran. She ran like a cat with a dog after it, across the lawn and over the neat fence, in a flurry of flame-coloured robes, with Hal like the chasing dog a foot or so behind and closing. The witch vanished over the fence in a red blur. Hal went after her in a black blur with trailing sleeves. Then the fence hid both of them from sight.
"I hope he catches her," said Martha. "The little girl's crying."
Down below, Megan put her arm round Mary and took both children indoors. There was no knowing what had happened to Hal and the witch. Letty and Percival and Martha and Michael went back downstairs. Fanny and Mrs. Fairfax were transfixed with disgust at the state of Hal's bedroom.
"Look at those spiders," Mrs. Fairfax said.
"And the dust on these curtains," said Fanny.
"Annabel, I saw some brooms in that passage you came through."
"Let's get them," said Mrs. Fairfax. "I'll pin that dress up for you, Fanny, and we'll get to work. I can't bear a room to be in this state."
"Oh, poor Hal," Sophie thought. "He does love those spiders."
She hovered on the stairs, wondering how to stop Mrs. Fairfax and Fanny. From downstairs, Michael called, "Sophie, we're going to look round the mansion. Want to come?"
That seemed the ideal thing to stop the two ladies from cleaning. Sophie called to Fanny and hobbled hurriedly downstairs. Letty and Percival were already opening the door. Letty had not listened when Sophie explained it to Fanny, and it was clear that Percival did not understand either. Sophie saw they were opening it, purple down, by mistake. They got it open as Sophie hobbled across the room to put them right. The scarecrow loomed up in the doorway against the flowers.
"Shut it!"
Sophie screamed. She saw what had happened. She had actually helped the scarecrow last night by telling it to go 10 times as fast. It had simply sped to the castle entrance and tried to get in there. But Miss Angorian was out there. Sophie wondered if she was lying in the bushes in a dead faint.
"No, don't," she said weakly.
No one was attending to her anyway. Letty's face was the colour of Fanny's dress, and she was clutching Martha. Percival was standing staring, and Michael was trying to catch the skull, which was yattering its teeth so hard that it was threatening to fall off the bench and take a wine bottle with it. And the skull seemed to have a strange effect on the guitar, too. It was giving out long, humming twangs.
Nom-harum, nom-harum.
Calcifer flamed up the chimney again.
"The thing is speaking," he said to Sophie. "It is saying it means no harm. I think it is speaking the truth. It is waiting for your permission to come in."
Certainly the scarecrow was just standing there. It was not trying to barge inside as it had before, and Calcifer must have trusted it. He had stopped the castle moving. Sophie looked at the turnip face and the fluttering rags. It was not so frightening after all. She had once had fellow feeling for it. She rather suspected that she had just made it into a convenient excuse for not leaving the castle, because she had really wanted to stay. Now there was no point. Sophie had to leave anyway. Hal preferred Miss Angorian.
"Please come in," she said, a little croakily.
Said the guitar. The scarecrow surged into the room with one powerful sideways hop. It stood swinging about on its one leg as if it was looking for something. The smell of flowers it had brought in with it did not hide its own smell of dust and rotting turnip. The skull yattered under Michael's fingers again. The scarecrow spun round gladly and fell sideways toward it. Michael made one attempt to rescue the skull and then got hastily out of the way, for as the scarecrow fell across the bench, there came the fizzing jolt of strong magic, and the skull melted into the scarecrow's turnip head. It seemed to get inside the turnip and fill it out. There was now a strong suggestion of a rather craggy face on the turnip. The trouble was, it was on the back of the scarecrow. The scarecrow gave a wooden scramble, hopped upright uncertainly, and then swiftly spun its body round, so that the front of it was under the craggy turnip face. Slowly, it eased its outstretched arms down to its sides.